Do you want to play a game?
Bloody Mary, I have your baby. Bloody Mary, I have your
light
baby.
Light as a feather, stiff as a board.
Light as a feather, stiff as a board.
Do you want to play a game?
Stiff as a board.
Needles, pins, elephant skins. What goes up the chimney smoke? May your wish and mine never be broke. Baby blue, blue
Bloody
baby.
Mary, I have your baby.
Concentrate.
Do you want to play a game?
People are dying. Children are crying. Concentrate.
I think he's dead. I know he's dead.
Light as a feather.
He feels dead.
Light as a feather. Stiff as a board.
He looks dead. He is dead.
Concentrate.
I believe in Bloody Mary.
Do you want to play a game?
Hello, listener. The season of the witch is upon us. It is October, and so it is time for many things. Pumpkins and crisp nights, of course. But shadows that move on their own, too. And whispers just over your shoulder telling you not to turn around. It is time for stories that make your hair stand on end. Stories told as the last midnight bell tolls. Stories told as the last ember of the fire dies, and you see just how many dark shapes are out there waiting at the edge of the light. It is time for our All Hallows read, and for storytelling. This year, I'm going to be telling you stories that start off innocently enough. Someone wants to play a game. Games are children's stuff, right? They can't be all that bad. But of course, even children are seldom so pure as we imagine them. And playing is just what a cat does with a mouse before it's devoured. And so, I will bring you tales of games gone wrong. Stories of play that turn from fun to deadly serious in a heartbeat, or the stopping of one. A word of warning. While you can probably figure out how many of these games work from the stories you hear, I cannot advise you to try them yourself. I can't stop you either, of course. But all consequences are your own. Play at your own risk. Our first story comes to us from the Ozark Mountains, where we find a group of young ladies getting ready to try out an old, old game. They want to know a little about their future, and they find out more than they bargained for in the Dumb Supper. Nora May worked in complete silence. She pushed the cornbread out of its pan and onto the plate without saying a word, even as a spot of hot bacon grease hit her thumb. She stuck it in her mouth and sucked it, but silently moved the plate to the table. Three of her friends, Rebecca, Abby, and Peggy, all worked in the same silence, setting charges round on the tablecloth between forks and spoons turned upside down. Even the glassware had been put mouth down on the cloth. They worked counterclockwise, not once taking a step forward, but only allowing themselves to move backward. More than once, Nora May noticed Peggy almost trip over her long skirts and sucked in a breath as she thought the girl might tumble to the ground. But Peggy always managed to right herself and continue. At the table, the girls laid five place settings, one for each of them, and a final empty setting for the guest of honor. Nora May knew they were doing this for her sake. She had been the one who'd brought up the idea of doing a dumb supper weeks ago, after church. And the other girls had at first hesitated at the idea. Nora May had convinced them, Peggy and Abby needing less convincing than pious Rebecca. But, in the end, all of them had agreed that on Halloween night they would try their experiment in the hopes of glimpsing one of their future husbands. After all, it was just a game, right? They were all eager to watch the mysterious guest plate, in the hopes of seeing a vision of some beau or another reflected in it. When they had been planning it, everything had seemed so exciting, so full of intrigue and mystery. Even Rebecca had gotten into the spirit, and had blushed when she said she hoped she might see Theodore Russell in the plate, as she had her eye on the tall, dark-haired boy with deep brown eyes who sat in the pew opposite her in church each week. The Russells, who owned the rights to one of the docks in the harbor, were good people to marry into as well, and Rebecca felt her decision was a practical one. Nora May, on the other hand, was not looking for Theodore Russell in the plate tonight. No, she didn't want any of the town boys, who all seemed like nothing so much as rowdy dogs fighting in the streets in her eyes. She wanted someone distant, someone more mysterious. Nora May wanted a stranger, and felt her skin grow hot at the thought of seeing such a man even for a moment in the dumb supper plate. To help their visions along, each girl had contributed a piece to the supper setting. The other three bringing pieces of family silver they'd managed to sneak out from under their mother's noses. Nora May, on the other hand, had placed a fine old silver knife with a long deer horn handle by the plate. A soldier's knife, one that had belonged to her pioneer grandfather. One that spoke of travel and adventure. She smiled briefly as she looked at it. And then the clock began to chime. Quickly, the girls all found their places, standing behind their chairs as Nora May lit the candle in the center of the table and all other lights were extinguished. They paused, listening to the slow clanging of the old grandfather clock as it tolled. 10, 11, 12. And then 13. The girls stopped, moving, their eyes connecting even in the muted light. Before anyone could speak, a rough wind suddenly shook the door, blowing it open and extinguishing the candle flame in a gust. All eyes turned toward the moonlit threshold where a tall, shadowy figure stood. The girls were too terrified to move, to speak, to do anything, as the stranger slowly, moving like smoke in a light breeze, almost seeming as if each step were taken barefoot on broken glass, or as though the specter were fighting against the pull of chains wrapped around him. He drew closer, his features too dark to be really seen. Nora May heard Rebecca let out a brief whimper, and the stranger stopped in his tracks, peering around, almost as though he were trying to see something himself. Nora May found her hand extending towards him, trying to reach his dark form, though whether she would repulse him or bring him closer to see his face, she was not sure. With her fingers inches away from his face, he turned again, peered into the darkness, and then his head fell, his gaze resting upon the table, and upon the moonlit gleam of Nora May's knife. His ink-black shadow of a hand reached for it. A strange, low rumbling sound filled the room, and the walls seemed to shake. Abby screamed. Rebecca fainted. Peggy grabbed a lamp and lit it. By the time there was light swimming around the room again, the shadow was gone. Nora May's arm was frozen in her reach, but it reached for nothing. And they all noticed at once, with a gasp, the knife was gone. The years passed. The girls occasionally recalled their Halloween supper in hushed whispers, but generally they forgot about it in the way that young people do as their daylight lives demand so much more of their attention. Peggy married first, while Abby moved away a few years later, writing to them all from Boston a few times and then generally disappearing from their lives and their minds. Rebecca stayed close to Nora Mae, and she eventually married Theodore. But Nora Mae did not marry. Where she had once been courted by many boys, she found that few of them came to call much after Halloween night. But then one day, a troop of soldiers passed through town on parade. One, a tall, dark-haired man with brown eyes, caught Nora Mae's attention and her favor, and eventually her hand. He was reputed to be a good man, although he seldom showed much in the way of passion or laughter. Still, he was handsome, and he was never unkind to Nora Mae, and so, with the blessing of her family, the two wed. It was on their wedding night, as they pulled into a little inn on their way up to Cape Cod, that Nora Mae turned to look at her new helpmeet in the growing darkness. Something jarred her, caught her attention, something about his profile in the twilight. She shivered, but said nothing, as he had their things brought up to their room and dutifully carried her over the threshold. Nora Mae forgot her fears and relished in her joy as a bride, kissing her husband softly, imagining the adventures that lay ahead. When he went out of the room to wash up before bed, she slipped out of her dress and turned off the lamps, eager to greet him when he returned. As soon as he walked through the door, Nora Mae froze. Every hair on her body stood on end. Her veins ran with ice. Standing in the doorway, in the dark threshold, was the shape of that stranger she had seen all those years ago. The shadowy specter she had summoned on Halloween night, the vision of her future had now come true. He paused, seeing how she blanched and trembled, closing the door slowly as he asked what was the matter. She felt foolish, silly, ridiculous for even thinking such a thing, and she giggled. She told him she had thought he was a ghost for a moment. He did not laugh, but asked what she meant in a low, soft voice. She explained to him all about the Halloween ritual, the dumb supper, and the specter at the door, the way she'd reached for him, the knife, the missing knife. "You," he said. His voice shook. He stepped forward, seeming to grow larger with each step. "You are the one. You damnable witch!" Nora Mae gasped, pulled the covers over her, shrank back, begging him to tell her what he meant. His hand slipped from his pocket. In it he held a silver knife, shining in the moonlight, set with a long deer horn handle. "That night I walked through hell," he shouted, lunging forward. The innkeeper's wife found Nora Mae the next day, pinned to the bed, with a knife sunk through her chest, right through her heart, and her eyes frozen wide in fright. Her husband, and all of his things were gone. And no one ever heard from him again.
Do you want to play a game?